Madam Chair, I have to leave at 1:15.
The House Committee on Education will come to order. It's Monday, February 22nd at 1 o'clock. If you have a cell phone or a pager, please turn it to silent. Also, join me in thanking Bonnie. It's her last day with us, and she's done a great job supporting the committee, so thank you very much.
Thanks, Bonnie.
And it's not Dana's last day, but we should appreciate Dana every day for all that she does to support this committee and the Senate committee. I'm going to open an informational hearing on an overview of capital construction in higher education and invite up Jay Kitten from OUS.
Hey.
And Representative Dimbro, I need to go to the speaker's office. So I will
sure.
Should I proceed?
Please do, Jay.
Okay.
Start by introducing yourself.
Yes, I will do that.
Oh, and everybody, could you turn off your cell phones? You all know that. Thanks.
Done.
Vice Chair Springer, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jay Kenton. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Oregon University System. And I'm here today to talk to you about the capital budget. I submitted written testimony, and it's got a handout that I may be referring to, so hopefully you have that in front of you. First, I wanted to thank you and the entire legislature for the support that you've given OUS in the operating and capital budgets the last few biennia. I also want to thank you for the support you've given for the opportunity grant, because that has allowed us to maintain access and affordability for our students. And that, combined with the capital budget, provides us with the capacity to serve those students. So the two are definitely related. It also allows us to make our learning environments the most productive and state-of-the-art that we can. As you know, our enrollments have been growing rapidly, thus we need additional space to serve those burgeoning enrollments. Our research is also growing, and so we're very appreciative of the support that we've gotten from you. We also appreciate the support for capital repair and deferred maintenance project. You probably know that we own roughly 50% of the state's buildings. Many of them are older and in need of repair and renovation. Thus, that support is greatly appreciated. As I noted before, I'm happy to report that many of these projects also allow OUS to be efficient, as they will result in significant energy savings or will support state-of-the-art pedagogy and research, thereby allowing us to stretch our precious operating resources even further. But most importantly, I think the reason I'm here today is to thank you for providing us with the budget to create jobs for Oregonians in this time of great need. On average, we estimate that every $1 million spent on a capital project will yield 9 jobs for largely Oregonians. Thus, in 2009-11 and 2007-09, the budgets that you passed for our capital, which I would say are both record capital budgets for the system, should equate to roughly 11,500 jobs for Oregonians. We have been working closely with the Department of Administrative Services in tracking the Go Oregon stimulus funding, and in the most recent report dated 12/31/09, we reported that 2,269 jobs had been created or retained, and that 80% of those jobs were filled by Oregonians. In addition, 83% of the materials, goods, and services that were procured from those for those projects were purchased from Oregon-based companies. And more than 8% of those companies were minority women-owned or emerging small businesses. We have been working very closely with the governor's advocate, the MWSB advocate, and the Oregon vendor communities to make them aware of these project opportunities, and will continue to strive to ensure the funding and jobs go to Oregonians to the extent possible. Again, I wanted to thank you for supporting OUS operating and capital budget needs. The support's very much appreciated and very much needed by our universities, our students, our communities in this state. I'd be happy to answer questions at this time.
Are there any questions for the Vice Chancellor? Vice Chair Springer.
Thank you very much. Jay, I'm sorry, you made the comment here, and thank you for your testimony.
that you estimate out of every $1 million invested in a capital project, 9 jobs will be created. Certainly, I'm assuming you mean permanent jobs in that because of the greater infrastructure.
Chair Dembro, Representative Springer, what we're referring to is 9 construction jobs in the process of building the project, and that's 9 per year on average. And those areas are the large, or have been significantly impacted by the recession. I've heard reports of 40-50% unemployment in the trades, and up to 80% unemployment in the architecture community. And thus, these types of projects directly impact those types of jobs.
Thank you.
Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Vice Chair. Actually, I'm not quite sure I got or heard the answer that I was expecting. So 9 jobs, as an example, for the life of the project. That's obviously one of the major issues is how do you define a job?
Mm-hmm. How long does it last?
How long does it last? Because a job painting a building that is done in 2 days, quite frankly, doesn't count. I mean, the employment's great, but it's how do we define a job?
Right. Chair Dembro, Representative Maurer. You know, DAS actually defined how we would define jobs for the purposes of the Go Oregon report, and I don't have that definition right in front of me, but my sense is it's a job for a year, and there may be multiple part-time jobs that aggregate together into a job for a year for a person. And obviously with projects of this nature, that's probably what we're talking about, is multiple part-time jobs or part-year jobs that aggregate into one full-year job for the equivalent of one Oregonian.
Right, because follow-up to that, because when we talk about FTEs in state government, an FTE is a job for 2 years because our budget cycles are 2 years.
Representative Conant.
Thank you, Co-Chair Dembro. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, this afternoon I think we are scheduled to hear the budget reconciliation bill 5100, in which we're all very happy to breathe that sigh of relief if we get to that point sometime yet today. But my comment is about bonding. Did you talk about that in your presentation? Did we get a lower rate for some of our bonds for some of these projects?
Co-Chair Dembro, Representative Comp, I did not talk about it, but it's a great question, and I can talk about it a little bit. The bond market has been somewhat volatile of late. As you know, we went through a period of great uncertainty, and things bounced around. It seems to be stabilizing today. And we're using projected interest rates on bonds. We have a bond sale going out next month, actually, roughly 4.5% interest for tax-exempt bonds. It'll be 100 to 150 basis points higher if they're taxable bonds. Some of our projects have private use in them with, you know, retail or other types of amenities. But it is a very favorable bond market. It's also a very favorable construction market generally. I mean, prices are down 30 to 40% over what we were experiencing just 2 to 3 years ago. So it's a great time to be in the market. It's a great time to be putting people back to work, et cetera.
The other follow-up, we heard quite a bit of information, it seems like yesterday, but it was a whole year ago, during our regular session about proposal for construction, particularly a waterfront building with OHSU. What do we see in our future for capital construction?
I'm sorry, could you tell us?
What does the OUS system see for the future in capital construction? Is this going to sort of catch us up, or are we looking forward with a great vision here?
Co-Chair Dembro, Representative Comp, we're in the process of putting our 11-13 budget request together as we speak, so I have pieces of it. I don't have the full picture. My sense is you'll see more of the same, where we'll obviously come first priority for capital repair and deferred maintenance type projects, but then we'll come for new projects. I know that there's a group in Bend that's working on a project that will be a partnership project with COCC and OSU for the Bend campus. I know that OIT is interested in a project in Portland, and there will be other projects that I probably, you know, we haven't requested the information yet, but my sense is it'll be more of the same. However, I understand that the state's debt, you know, limit is, you know, we're at the limit now, and we're working closely with Treasury and the Debt Advisory Commission to make sure we understand that and that we tender a request that is in line with whatever that forecasted amount of debt is.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Ben Orman.
Thank you, Co-Chair Denbrough. No, I guess you're Vice Chair. Excuse me. In my district, Mount Hood Community College, President Ski had advised me that there were some buildings that had not been touched for 50 years. Is a lot of the work that's being done basically like that, taking care of buildings that haven't been touched for a significant amount of time?
Co-Chair Denbrough, Representative Van Orman. A number of our buildings, you know, higher ed went through a great expansion back during the GI Bill, during the Johnson era, the New Deal, and in the 60s. And so a lot of our buildings were built in that period of expansion in the 60s, early 70s. And they're now 50 years old. Their systems are wearing out. Some of the design or the layout of the buildings is obsolete. Even our housing, you know, we're, you know, back then we built a lot of student housing units where they're shared rooms with bathrooms down the hall, and we're finding students today want more of a private room or, you know, a bathroom that's in at least a quad unit or something that's shared among fewer people. And so there are a lot of our projects that are for exactly that, and that's what Robert Simonton, who's the Director of Capital Projects, would normally be talking about, the age of our buildings. We have a lot of them in that 50-year-old period. Unfortunately, they are built with asbestos in them. That makes them more expensive to, you know, because you go get into the walls and you've got to have people with protective gear on to deal with those sorts of things. So you're exactly right, I think. And that's largely why you see it, you know, is because that GI Bill, the expansion of higher ed in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, those buildings are now 50-plus years old.
Can I go on,
Ben? Yeah, Jay, I'm going to follow up on that. So, you know, you've talked about the advantages in terms of jobs, in terms of economic stimulus through, you know, hiring from local vendors. What are some of the future savings that you see coming from these projects? I mean, energy savings, savings from co-locating programs, you know, by making the adjustments so that you can have a more efficient layout for university services, things like that. Could you talk to that?
Right. I'd be happy to, Chair Denbrough. I mean, you hit on a number of them. Savings from energy. We are putting solar on tops of buildings. We're putting in new windows, new lighting fixtures, other things to make our buildings more efficient. In fact, we're building new steam plants that have cogeneration facilities at OSU and U of O. We're putting in a geothermal well system that actually will, one of the projects you approved for the 09-11 session was a hot water well. We drilled a well a mile deep underneath the campus at Klamath Falls to hit hot water that will generate electricity and possibly take that campus entirely off the grid. We've done a lot of things like that, and in fact, you know, we find students are really attracted to that. They want to live in the housing unit, just the greenest of green, and seem willing to make the trade-offs with maybe temperature variations that are broader than what we're normally accustomed to, things like that. In terms of pedagogy, we're bringing in a lot of technology into our classrooms with send-receive distance education capabilities, as well as projection units and things that allow faculty to project their curricula, you know, more efficiently, et cetera. So, and I think that really is going to be distinctive for Oregon in the future and a real hallmark that, you know, will demonstrate leadership for the state. So.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Vice Chair Denbrough. Just a comment. It is the utmost pleasure to me, since my son works at the cogeneration plant at the University of Oregon, that there is discussion about updating and modernizing. The Van Orman family really supports that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you next session, Jay. Okay, next we have, we move to a distinguished panel of community college representatives led by the president of Clackamas Community College, Joanne Truesdale, Gerald Hamilton from Cave Falls Community College, and John Wyckoff from the OCCA.
I know. Thank you.
Chair Dembro, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the legislative director of the Oregon Community College Foundation, and I would like to start with a correction. I believe, Chair Dembro, you probably meant to say two distinguished panelists and John Wyckoff.
actually, I didn't see your name. Your name was written in.
I'm just going to briefly touch on, you've got three documents from us, one that's an overview, so I'm not going to read it, but I'm just going to briefly touch on some of the highlights of our deferred maintenance funding and what went on with the Go Oregon, as we've been asked to come talk about that today. And I want to start as in a similar vein as our colleague from the Oregon University system, and just start by expressing our appreciation for the investment in community colleges in both the Go Oregon funding and as well as the capital dollars that the colleges have received to do to expand in a number of ways on campuses, and specifically to the Go Oregon money. You know, with the campuses looking at statewide enrollment increases of almost 18% now, and you know, in many cases, these dollars were allowing the campuses to, in some ways, directly and indirectly, deal with those with that crush of enrollment, where you're able to, in some cases, add emergency classrooms, or in other cases, you know, resurface a parking lot that you could now use at full capacity. Because for our largely commuter students, the ability to be able to park on the campus becomes a barrier to access. Things like that. So, in many cases, and you'll hear more about it from the president sitting next to me about ways that they were able to do that. So where we really saw it, I mean, you heard us talk a lot last session about being economic first responders in the recession, and we are still seeing that today. And these dollars, like I say, in ways that are direct and indirect, have, I think, allowed the campuses to continue that role in their communities that in some cases have been hit so hard by unemployment. You know, we're seeing enrollment increases even far beyond the 18% average that we're looking at, where you've seen economies particularly hard. So let me just run quickly through some of the stats for the Go Oregon projects. In Senate Bill 338, the colleges were given money for 187 projects for about $44 million in lottery bonds, and 9.7 in 11G bonds. As of May 1st, 2009, all projects had begun, and in the December DAS report, about 73% of the projects, 136 of them, were completed. Based on conversations with the colleges, we think we're up to about 80% now, though that report has not been compiled and released yet for the next round, but we think that that's about where we are. One of the things out of the that was stressed to us and everybody, every agency receiving Go Oregon dollars, was the need to hire locally, to hire Oregonians. We think we were quite successful there. About 91% of the employees were Oregonians, with about 97% of the contractors being Oregonian contractors, 81% of the products coming from Oregon, and about 11% going to emerging minority women and small business owners. It was able, because of those dollars, we were able to improve efficiencies in many areas, energy efficiency being one that was highlighted in the DAS report, where it's projected that we will, over the life of the projects, have saved about $8.2 million statewide. And I think that gets to something that my colleague from the Oregon University system talked about, which is, you know, when you've got these deferred maintenance backlogs for so long, what they do is make your buildings and your campuses run less efficiently in any number of ways, whether it's you know, the heat that you're that is spilling out of the buildings to the kind of patchwork maintenance that you do that lowers the overall efficiency of your institution. And in areas like that, you can see where we've been able to increase efficiency, which allows us to serve the students that we're seeing come in through this recession that we're seeing in such large numbers. And with that, I think I will close and take questions, or can just move to the two sitting next to me.
Why don't we hear from the two presidents, and then we'll open it up.
Okay. Vice Chair Dembo, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joanne Truesdell. I'm president of Clackamas Community College. I'm going to take a moment and give you an idea about what we did with our $1.23 million that we received from the Go Oregon projects in Article 11G bonds. We essentially, after a 10-year period, had just fortuitously finished another 15-year lookout as to what were the critical facility needs that we had in the areas of deferred maintenance. By that time, we had accumulated $22 million of deferred maintenance lists, and we managed to fund 1.3 of those with Go Oregon, and then our board provided 1.3 match in from our reserves. What we did is three concerted areas. One was health and safety. The other was data and improved service. And then the third was around our learning environment, especially in our science, engineering, and mathematics and technology facilities. The core of our college that we directed the investments in is about 40 years old. And so our strategy was very simple. Our board decided to adopt local contract review standards where we gave preference to in-district businesses as a priority, those businesses who hired in-district employees, and then those who were in the regional metro area and then Oregon. What was great was that the results that they had included 9 Clackamas County employers, 12 metropolitan employers, a total of 21 employers, all were owned in Oregon. And then also, we had 41 district residents that were employed and 173 regional residents. A total of 214 people were employed on our projects. And I want to go back to something. In all of our projects, ours were individuals who were in either construction, electrical, low voltage electrical. They were in places where, and we began our projects in March, they were in places where the economy was, for them, starting to get to the point where it was at a lull, where they had 10-year people who were already starting to get their hours cut. So many of the businesses and the people we spoke to were people who were 10-year employees, so they were already at journey level. They were the company had downsized to the point where they were doing custodial work, electrical work, and any other work for the company they could find. Our projects provided a bridge because they knew in a couple months they would have additional projects coming in as a result of some bid that would take them up to Seattle or some other place. But our projects created a bridge. And for example, one contractor, the supervisor for one of our jobs, described he was working 30 hours per week. He had just received some notice that before this contract was let that he would be down to 20 hours a week. And if it hadn't been for this particular work, he would have moved there quickly. He had a crew of 9, and all of those individuals would have been laid off. So these funds helped us meet also in a very different way. 10% of our budget reductions we incurred this past year. We have an increase in headcount of 23% so far this year. Right now it's about roughly 4,500 more people on campus. And with our science and technology building, we had a transformer that was already shaky, and the increase in electrical demand because it's on a lot more as a result of serving more students. They were worried a little bit about a power outage. We were able to do two things. One was, while we couldn't replace the entire system, we were able to replace the transformer. And that's especially good in that in a science experiment, the last thing you want in chemistry is for the fans and hoods to go out while they're doing something like creating plastic polymers, as Dr. Hamilton would say. And then The other was we decided to go for an electrical generator for our data system. Our college trunk line one, not a redundant loop, is roughly 40 years old, and it's degrading over time, what we did is used a backup generator. And what happened, this was for our data system and data center. And this year, during winter term, we had it in place. It was great because our demand for first day of registration was 65% more people registering at 1 a.m. than there were the previous year, and by the end of the day, we had doubled the number of people to register. Now, our college is 37,000 people. So it's a high demand. And again, the electrical draw was such that while that building sometimes can go in and out of power, we at least knew our data system was going to remain intact. And then finally, it was an improvement to our communication system. Our phone system, we believe we got useful life out of. It was 30 years old. It had been unsupported for 15 years, and it was run off of a 286 computer. We moved to voice over internet protocol, and in that process, we are able to do a queuing system. We oftentimes in our institution, as access is a key issue, with a 157% increase in financial aid applicants and recipients, we started down the process of too many people were leaving too many voicemails, and too little staff were getting back in a timely way to talk to people about what their aid meant and how they were able to go to school. So we are now in the final stages of implementing a queuing process, which will exactly allow us to keep people on the line, give them technical assistance, as you do when you call any other customer support service, and get in a queue to get a live person so that they don't have to hope that that particular voicemail gets answered within the next 48 hours when they're worried. So we were able to accomplish those key things. One of the things that we had thought was, as we reduced our budget by $4 million this last year, we were hoping our projection for our utilities decrease in cost was $140,000. We achieved that $140,000 goal within 5 months of these different projects that we did for our heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, balancing, and some of our other activities. So on behalf of the men and women who worked on the projects, and every day when I would walk out of my building and the people who were doing the data communication system would see me, and I would say hello to Mike, the foreman, and he would, again, day after day, say, thank you so much for choosing our company. Thank you so much for employing us. Without this, we wouldn't have jobs. And I think that is the most profound and humbling of experiences for all of us to carry forward. So I'm glad we were part of it. I'm glad we were able to be constructive with our construction. Thank you.
Okay, Jerry.
Vice Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, my name is Gerald Hamilton. I am the president of Klamath Community College in Klamath Falls. Thank you for allowing us to come here today to talk about our experiences with Go Oregon. On our campus, the Go Oregon really accomplished two impacts. First, allowed us to provide contracts to 11 different companies in our community, who were then in turn able to hire our neighbors, and in one case, my neighbor, for a period of time. Folks who had not been working for some time. We completed 7 projects. The size ranged from $21,000 to $525,000. The project used, again, like I said, 11 different contractors, creating at least 50 jobs that ranged in terms of several months. The impact of those jobs is articulated best, I think, in an article, and you might have that in your packet, that ran in our local newspaper as we were completing the siding project of two of our 4 buildings. And it was interesting, as you talked to the contractors, this is the kind of thing we heard. And this is Jerry Puglio. And Jerry was a 53-year-old carpenter who had been unemployed for 12 months, was sinking further in debt as time went on. He made the comment that he was, with his unemployment and the little meager amount that his wife could earn, he was falling in debt $1,000 a month. He, because of this position, because he was able to get a job with Broster House Construction, the local Klamath Falls construction company, he felt that he was able to dig himself out of the hole and put himself on the right track. His final comment, and I won't read the entire article to you, said that he was like a kid in a candy store to be back working again. So that's what we heard by all of these folks who were working, whether it be the person doing the concrete work, the siding work, the folks who were working on our major canal project. We're very excited to be back to work. The second impact for our campus is probably a larger impact, and we are a small campus. We had, like I say, four buildings that were purchased when we moved. We established ourselves in 1996, two of which were very old. One was a carpet store, equipment dealership, and quite frankly, it was almost the siding was falling off on a daily basis. I mean, it was literally old metal siding that you pull a piece off and you could see daylight through, as metal siding goes. We were able to fix that up and re-side that building. We were able to culvert an irrigation canal that bisects our campus that was a constant safety problem for us. We were able to build more parking spaces on our campus at a time when our growth is so big that we didn't have enough parking for our students. They were having to schedule based on when they could find a parking space, not when the classes were available. Our enrollment right now, last year was up 25%. We expect to at least be that much or more. I got a call this morning that by 11 o'clock we were pushing 40% enrollment for spring already, and we only started enrolling last night at 6 o'clock. So that's the kind of numbers we're seeing. And so for us, we're looking more at transitioning our campus into something that's bigger and broader. And this allowed us to start. We're coupling this with a capital project of $16.5 million that we're breaking ground on in late March. That will double the size of our campus. We're adding, for us, a lot of square footage, 50,000 square feet, three new buildings. We also, to get that done, we have in the queue six new programs that are all workforce-ready programs that will allow our community to come to us and in a short amount of time, in months, if that's what they desire. Obviously, they'll be articulated to OUS if they want to go on, but there'll be short-term certificate and associate degree programs that will allow them to be workforce-ready, things like automotive, diesel, construction management. This really fit in well for us because it was the beginning of an entire campus transition for us. Moving to that next level of our service for our community was very important. So as we were able to do several things, provide jobs, move our campus forward, take care of some incredible problems that we had, and I would echo all of our offerings that we are very appreciative, and I know the folks who worked on our projects are equally as appreciative. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, questions?
Thank you. I was going to say co-chair also. Chair Denbrough, my appreciation for how fast this went on and is accomplished. We sometimes put our faith in your hands, and I got to be biased. Community colleges have never let us down, much less OUS. But it's really a nice thing to hear the results of your work.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We'll just go ahead and watch it. I don't think this gentleman that worked on this project that the article's written about, I mean, I don't think he would have appreciated doing just, quote, make work, you know, digging a ditch and filling it back in. And so, I mean, I have faith, because we discussed it up here, that these are, you know, long-term projects that have long-term value that add to either a program or, you know, long-term savings. And so I'm asking for your affirmation that, in fact, that these projects were of long-term value and weren't, quite frankly, you know, power washing the moss off the roof.
One of the project that Jerry worked on was a project to save two of our four buildings because literally the siding was falling off. It had deteriorated to a point where, it not in too long distant years, that those buildings quite possibly could become uninhabitable, and we own them, and they were two of our four buildings. We hope Jerry comes back and helps us build the new project, which is the $16.5 million project. The other major project, we did the canal. We did cover the canal. Huge safety issue. Our irrigation canal went through our campus. So I would assure you, and I'd invite you to Klamath Community College, they are long-term, have huge impact for us long-term.
Thanks.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
Vice Chair, sorry, we are all confused with this new order. I just really wanted to say that I really feel badly we couldn't do more, but I am appreciative of the efforts that you have made to restore, to build our faith. We give you some money and you do great things, and I want to thank you for that. And you tell Dr. Ski I'm waiting for my personal visit.
Vice Chair Dimbro and members of the committee, I wanted to just be able to share with you two things that occurred as a result of our conversations with local contractors. One is we learned of a need for them to have LEED certification so they could bid on other projects at the local level that were about housing and some of the special projects downtown. We heard other kinds of critical needs for training that helped them get caught up. So now our Small Business Development Center is creating those opportunities for them. And we've since applied for several grants to give them very specific training to themselves and their current employees to get that information. And I also wanted to acknowledge Representative Maurer. We at Clackamas deliberately did pull out some of our projects where you will see a painting project. It was one of three, so you tear out the wall, you put the electrical back in, and then you have to paint it. We deliberately did that because we had businesses in our community from the very rural parts of Clackamas County. Yes, we have people who are in small towns, and we wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity to bid on some of the work as well. So we did, just out of acknowledgement for that. But otherwise, I do want to share, as my colleague says, these were meaningful. My uncle and my dad pay taxes, and they ask me all the time how well I'm doing on these things. And at 85, I have to give them a darn good answer, so appreciate it.
Well, and I would appreciate the fact that if you rip a wall out and replace it, then in fact we are painting it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that in our projects we have them listed out more specifically and than maybe other community colleges. So.
Great. I'd like to follow up on that. And I'm very impressed with the statistics of 91% of the employees that John gave for us system-wide, 91% of the workers being Oregonians, and 97% of the projects going to Oregon contractors. That, I assume, didn't happen all by itself. And, Joanne, you mentioned a deliberative kind of effort, mm-hmm. both to look at the geography of the firms and also their status as minority women, small emerging business. We often hear that it's very difficult to do that kind of thing for legal reasons, but you seem to have found a way that at least has avoided a lawsuit up to this point, right? Could you say something more about that? Because it sounds like a really good model for us to be following.
Vice Chair Dimbro and members of the committee, we actually were able to do some of that modification as a result of the Department of Administrative Services change, so that for these specific projects, Go Oregon dollars, we were able to do a much more specific targeted project around them. So, but the other part that we did do, which we hadn't done for a while, was to reconnect with our Small Business Development Center and actually have them feed out the information. We also advertised in our local community papers because some of the projects were of a smaller size. We didn't have to go to big multi-million-dollar companies that could actually front a bond for many of these projects. The other thing that we did do is we also used the state's website and sent out information to all of the contractors listed on the state's website. So we were able to do things a little more targeted.
And I, Representative Dimbro, members of the committee, I would also suggest we took the proactive attack of having pre-construction meetings with folks in our community. We didn't let that the ads in the construction journals be our only connection with our folks. I mean, as we are with our next project, we had those meetings beyond what the CCWD and the Oregon group had meetings in ours. We actually called folks, had them come in. We went through the kinds of work. We told them how to bid it, what we expected. You know, we obviously didn't bid the projects for them, but clearly we wanted them to know what was going on and how to do that, and I think that helped our folks a lot.
Okay. And let me just ask a follow-up to that, Dr. Hamilton. So for the next project, which is a big project, are you going to be able to do as much outreach? Are you optimistic about being able to hire locally for that big project?
Chair D'Ambrosio, committee, yes, we are. We've retained a CMGC contractor who is a Southern Oregon contractor, and part of our contract with him is a local outreach plan. He is responsible, the company is responsible to have these meetings within that contract, and it is a contract requirement, and he is at this point setting up those meetings and quite frankly has worked with most of our folks. He's a person who's been in our community a long time, although lives over the mountain in Ashland, but he is having those meetings. He is constantly working with those folks, so while we can't bid the jobs for them and we can't guarantee they're going to get them, we can certainly make sure that they know everything, they're up to speed, they are really on top of how to bid and how to get the maximum, you know, for their bid and how to be very competitive in that process.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a wonderful article. It absolutely is. It's the kind of article that makes us all feel good, and I appreciate that. And there's lots of successes in here, and I don't want to miss an opportunity to spotlight those. I also don't want to miss an opportunity to ask what were some of the challenges that you faced through this process, because we painted a great picture, and I'm thrilled. But looking down the road next time, not necessarily in this kind of a format, what were some of those challenges that maybe we need to be aware of that we need to look at next time?
Do you want to go?
Well, Chairman Dimbro, Representative Springer, I think the biggest problem for us was obviously getting started. I mean, we wanted to comply with the notion that it was going to get done very quickly. We did that. I mean, ours are done, have been done for quite some time. Which meant, in our case, we had to actually break every project again. For example, we talk about culverting an irrigation canal across our campus, which was a safety issue. You don't find 58-inch culvert very often, and we had to actually go out and buy that before we initiated the contractor. It had to be in by April 15th because that was when they were turning the water on the canal. So you had to be very matter-of-fact and very direct about how you went about, you know, putting the bid packages together and making sure that was done in that way. You know, it scrambled. We were... worked very hard to get it done on time. I don't know that I have a lot of suggestions other than I think the biggest challenge for us was how do you know, getting all of the engineering done, making sure that the pre-construction work was done appropriately before you let that bid. And oftentimes that takes some time, and being able to let contracts with the engineers, for example, that said you're going to be done in a month instead of 2 months because that's the work we have, that's our timeline, you know, caused us probably the biggest difficulties. But I don't know that there's a solution to that.
Vice Chair Dimbro, Representative Springer. Our largest difficulty is we're a college that does not have a bond. We did not go out for a bond or pass a bond at any within the last couple of years. And so when we received our Article 11G bonds, we were required in order to access them to put up a match. The difficulty for us at that point, I think, is more in the future. We used reserves that look like we might need them this next biennium. So the timing, it was a blessing, and it was also forward as a challenge. I think that a couple of other points that I'd like to acknowledge is we were doing these projects, and For some of the projects, we had to pick and choose which ones could be done in the evenings and on weekends because we were on a very tight timeline. We knew from Senator Courtney's remarks before the gavel fell what was expected of us. And so we made sure that all of the work happened after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we removed classrooms and put them over in a different building or a facility. And then also on the weekends, the tight timeline we had allowed for really no errors. A couple of times we had folks, our folks, there in the evening trying to figure out how to, an unexpected item happened, and we were breakneck speed trying to get it fixed so that we could stay on track. But otherwise, I think it was, for us, it was mostly the reserves that we needed to use in order to match was a challenge. Longer term, I think some of our other projects that we have in our $22, now $19 million plan are of such a scope that it would take 6 months to a year, might be a little more weather sensitive than the ones we were able to pick out at this time.
Thank you.
Thanks for that question, Madam Vice Chair.
May I just...
Yes, Rep. Maurer.
You know, I long before we came to the 09 session, we kind of knew something like this was going to happen. And the school district in my town, I went and talked to him. I said, you have a list, right? And he said, yeah, we've got it and we're refining it. And I think that happened across the state, and it's really important that the administration is always got that ready list, because you never know what happens, and I think it actually helped my school district in some other conversations beyond just the initial money. But and so I think it's always imperative to have that list of ready items, because there's always something to be done.
Any further questions? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to close the information meeting. Thank you very much for your testimony, keeping us up to speed, and just keep doing that. I'm going to close the information meeting. Dana, do you want to tell us about Wednesday?
I'm happy to defer to the chair.
Sure. So Wednesday we are having an informational hearing about the All Prep Academy and the questions that have been raised by the Oregon Department of Education. The department will give an overview of what the concerns were, the letters they sent out to districts, all of their information was due back today, and then we'll have the folks from All Prep here to respond to those questions as well.
And we start
any of your questions?
1 o'clock?
1:30.
1:30.
1:30.
You're sure okay. We won't be on the floor?
No.
No.
But that's why we're shooting for 1:30.
Anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none, I'm going to adjourn this February 21st meeting of the Education Committee.
There we go.